702 Masterclass.
Masterclass time. We're joined by neurologist, brain health specialist, and co-founder and chair of Africa Brain Health Network, as well as founder of Memorability, Dr. Kirti Ranchod, who is going to be chatting to us part two of neuroplasticity. Welcome back. Thank you for coming to studio.
Thank you. I look forward to the discussion today.
So let's do a recap for everybody joining us on what neuroplasticity is.
So neuroplasticity is the ability of the brain to grow, to adapt, or change. Mm. It happens naturally as we learn either a new skill or we develop an old skill. Mm. Or sometimes it happens in response to trauma. So for example, if you've had a stroke, different parts of the brain can take over certain functions. Mm. And so that's the process of plasticity. And what happens in plasticity is that new cells are formed, new connections are formed between cells or different parts of the brain. Mm. And that is, in essence, what plasticity is.
So just in terms then of, you know, I was wondering about, do you have the ability to measure? Is there a measurement of neuroplasticity that a person has? And I mean a scientific measurement. Obviously, as a neurologist, you'll be able to sort of assess where a person might be at. But can a person just come in and say, please measure? And you say, yo, you're doing badly.
No, there isn't a measure of neuroplasticity either. What is done in a lab setting is there's specific chemicals that they measure. Mm. And those chemicals go up when the process of plasticity is activated. And they look under a microscope in terms of the number of cells in terms of in the brain. But it's not something we measure.
And it's not something you can look at it on a CAT scan or anything like that, because it's more to do with ability.
Yes.
So if then a person is struggling and it is contrary to their age and contrary to any trauma, that they've never had trauma, they don't have any medical issues, what are the questions you start to ask them to try and assess how to help them? So let's use an example. Let's say I suddenly am struggling to do my job, because it does require some things to do with memory. It requires me to read on the fly. It requires me to do things that need my brain to be quite active. But now these abilities are just not what they used to be. But there's no medical anything. There's no trauma anything. What are the questions you're going to start asking me that start to help us get to the bottom of this?
Right. So I think you've mentioned the first key one is to make sure there's no medical problems. So
yes.
Just make sure.
So let's assume
anything.
Everything is fine.
Everything
I've
is
never
fine.
Hurt anything. I've never fallen. Nothing.
Yes.
Yes.
So the next step is then to look at your lifestyle and what can be having an impact on your memory, your learning, your behavior, your function. So one of the first things, particularly in our current environment, that I would look at is, what are you eating?
Mm.
And we often forget the impact that it has, or we understand some aspect of the impact that it has. But diets high in saturated fats, high in sugar, affect brain function after just 2 weeks.
Mm.
And if you think about yourself on a holiday where we are super indulgent, you
listen,
know,
listen, December is a problem. You're actually getting me to think, is that possibly the reason that we struggle in those first few weeks of coming back to work?
And it probably is, right? And if you just, I think of myself on a holiday, and I know that at the end of it, I'm a bit slower in a sense, right? because we're eating all this indulgent food, it does have an impact on how we feel and how we think.
Yes.
The
yes.
second big thing currently is sleep.
Mm.
So are you sleeping enough? And what do we need to do around that to improve your sleep?
And remind us, for an adult, let's say 30 years and over, people who are actively using their brains on the daily, what is the recommended number of hours?
Recommended number of hours is 7 to 9 hours of sleep. However, there are individual variations.
Mm.
So it's 7 to 9 hours of sleep, and you wake up rested and you wake up willing to enjoy your day.
Mm.
But sometimes you're going to need more sleep, sometimes you're going to need less sleep, and some people need more or less sleep.
Mm.
So just to be aware of that. But the standard recommendation is 7 to 9 hours of sleep.
Because we do know there are people who operate on 4, 5, 6, but it's accompanied with a million cups of coffees and all those things that go with it.
Yeah, that's not the healthy.
Yes.
House asleep.
Are you, I'm curious what your thoughts are on energy drinks.
I'm so conservative with so many things, actually. So energy drinks have such high levels of sugar and caffeine, typically, that they're not good in the short term. They're not good in the long term. Mm. And they can help you sort of in a short term setting. You need to stay up for a longer period. And, you know, your brain sort of functions better for that short time with the higher caffeine level. But it's not sustainable. It's not even sustainable beyond 2 hours. And there are specific health consequences if you have more and more. And so that's the challenge with them. Mm. I used to have to study a whole lot, right?
Yes.
And I literally probably used energy drinks twice. I never used caffeine. I had fruit juice.
What?
Yes. So the point is,
how do we get there in our life? You used fruit juice to study late. Oh my gosh. My goodness. Because I think about the fact that many years ago when I was doing the early breakfast show, which is 4 to 6 a.m., I mean, energy drinks were very prevalent in my life at that time. And I know it messed up my system, not just the energy drinks, but the hours. My body's rhythms were just off because you're up at 1 a.m. Sometimes I was going to sleep at 10 p.m. But I recall we had a show about people and their lifestyles where they drink energy drinks. The air hostesses, a whole lot of truck drivers, they phoned in the Uber drivers. Some of them saying, I drink 3 a day, Dragon, Monster, Red Bull, you name all of those brands. And they are yet to see the actual impact. So can you touch on a little bit in this hypothetical scenario of you're assessing me and we're going through? So if now I'm like, actually, there was a period a few years ago where I was drinking Red Bulls every day. Could that be a cause of me now losing certain abilities and my brain functions?
Potentially, yes, but it's hard because there's lots of other factors that go along with it. So with the Red Bull, you would not have been sleeping well. Mm. Right? And poor sleep has an impact on brain function and brain performance as well.
And poor sleep has an impact on appetite
and
how you eat.
And it has an impact on appetite and how you eat. And so then you eat unhealthy, which then again affects your sleep. So it's this vicious cycle. So in essence, like I said last time, you have to consider this ecosystem and you have to start thinking about it like that. So food, sleep, social relationships, stimulating your brain, exercise, and avoiding toxins. So excessive alcohol, smoking, cannabis, and these energy drinks.
There were a few people on the WhatsApp line, and I'm including myself in this group of people. We need to address this cannabis one, but we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to...
702 Masterclass.
20 minutes after 2 o'clock, it is part 2 of our masterclass on neuroplasticity with Dr. Kirti Ranchod, who is a neurologist and brain health specialist. We take your calls on 011-883-0702, the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. Before we go to the lines, I see your calls, Anne and Lerato. I was asking about cannabis. Now, when you're with us the first time, I didn't even get to all of the questions, but one of them was like, you need to tell us about this cannabis thing. Why is it bad? And we've heard many a time that they say cannabis makes you slow or it slows your brain. But many creatives, for example, credit their best work to cannabis. What would you say it actually does to the brain? And should people be quitting it altogether or like just limit your, treat it like a Panado, only take it once in a while?
If I was that conservative about energy drinks, how conservative am I going to be about cannabis? The problem with it is that people assume there's no harm. And because people assume there's no harm, people are consuming more and more of it. Mm. Without an understanding of how much they should use, how much is harmful for them, when not to use it, what situations you should not be using it in. And because of it, if I look at, let's say, 20 years ago and how much people were using versus now, it's become a product as cigarettes or alcohol. And so people are just consuming so much. And that's where the problem comes in, firstly. Secondly, there are certain percentage of people who have a vulnerability to cannabis. Now, the only way you know it is by experiencing that vulnerability. But that increases your risk of certain mental illnesses and potentially can be a trigger for certain mental illnesses. So there's a host of problems with it that we need to start looking at and then understanding who really should not be using it at all. Who becomes dependent on it and then starts smoking or using more. And that's the critical part of it.
I think what I hear often are the people who say, you've never heard of somebody dying of a weed overdose. So there's no harm. And secondly, that it's grown from the earth. So I don't know what your thoughts on that. And also connected to that were the people asking about mushrooms and ketamine.
So again, because of my medical experience, I saw lots of harm related to cannabis, which is why I'm so conservative. I also saw harm related to energy drinks. And so what happens is people would come in into the hospital. Yes, they did not overdose, but they had significant mental health crises provoked by cannabis, and that is the problem.
And I think the way you've worded it makes sense. So you won't know, but it might trigger something that was already existing within you. Let's go to the lines. Lerato from Pretoria. Hi, Lerato.
Hi, Lebo and Doctor. Quick question. So I just wanted to know the long-term effects of medication such as Ritalin or Concerta on your short-term or long-term that very difficult word I'm trying to pronounce. The reason why I'm asking is because I find that some days if one forgets to take it, your brain just acts a bit slower than it would on a normal basis. So I'm just very interested in when I grow older, I'm in my late 30s now, but when I grow older, 50s and 60s, how will that affect my brain? That's just a question I wanted to know. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Lerato, before you go, what was your specific diagnosis that you're on Ritalin? Because some people just use it for the things it can give them without an actual diagnosis.
ADHD.
ADHD, and that's a big, big one. Thank you so much for that question, Lerato. Doctor?
So firstly, yes, I think if you do have a medical reason to use the medication, it is indicated, and then all medication has an effect and a side effect. And over time, again, I think it's going to depend on the individual in terms of how you're going to respond to Ritalin over the long term. With any medication, you also want to understand at which points you, with your health professional, can decrease the medication, can potentially stop the medication, depending on how you've changed and how your response in terms of the illness that you have has changed, so that you do minimize potential long-term impacts.
Thank you so much, Lerato, for that question. Anne in Sandton, hi.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Could I please ask a doctor, my granddaughter is in hospital with encephalitis. She's 16 years old. They have done a lumbar puncture. They've done a MRI. And she is on aciclovir. She's on many, many. She's been given so many painkillers. She's on anti-inflammatories. She's... you name it, she's on it. She has been for 6 days now. They did MRI yesterday. They didn't find anything wrong with the MRI. I would like to ask a doctor, in her opinion, what would the next step be? She is still in terrible pain with the headache.
Oh, thank you so much, Anne in Sandton. Just for everybody, obviously doctor can't do diagnoses over the phone. What she can do is respond generally of the things that could be or possible next steps. So please, to everybody that is listening and asking questions, always consult with your, you know, the specific doctor or specialist. What is encephalitis, doctor?
So encephalitis is an infection or inflammation of the brain tissue. It can be viral, it can be bacterial. And the diagnosis is made with a lumbar puncture, we would do an MRI or a CAT scan in addition to that. And then specific treatment will depend on what we've actually found, depending on the investigation. So the lumbar puncture results, etc. But I think you're right. I think this is something that you actually have to discuss with your health professionals, because it depends on what those results actually show to decide on next steps, in essence, and how she's responded to treatment from day one to now. But I can imagine that it's really stressful, and that's why you called. But yes, I think it is best to speak with the relevant health professionals.
And I think also for us to all be reminded that some of these medical processes take time, because with the different tests, they're trying to get more information and get a more accurate diagnosis, as opposed to just pouring medication into you for a guess.
Yes.
Of something. We've got Sandy from Bedford View. Sandy, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I just want to know about a diagnosis in terms of a trauma that I've experienced. I suffered brain injury and from a hijacking, and I believe that my olfactory nerve was severed, and that is the reason why I have anosmia, which is the loss of smell and obviously then a loss of taste. I just want to know if there is a way to get you know, a proper diagnosis in terms of whether it is related to the olfactory nerve, and then from a neuroplasticity point of view, is there some sort of treatment or some sort of solution that may be out there?
Thank you so much. And I'm so sorry for the trauma you experienced, Sandy. I hope your healing journey is continuing from strength to strength. Doctor?
So it would be a clinical diagnosis largely. So when you see a neurologist, they would basically test smell, test taste using different scents or different tastes. And that would largely, like I say, be a clinical diagnosis in terms of the anosmia, which is the loss of smell, and then the most likely cause would be secondary to trauma and the damage to the olfactory nerve, as you mentioned already. So there's no, there's nothing else specifically. In terms of recovery, yes, your brain can recover. It depends on the extent of the damage of the nerve in it, itself, in terms of how much recovers with time. There have been certain sort of trials where they've looked at training the brain again with smell. So what they would do is they would give certain scents, so let's say mint or chocolate or coffee, and you have to retrain your brain in a sense that this is what it is. Even if you can't smell it, this is what coffee is, this is what mint is. But I don't think there's anybody doing it here in South Africa, and I don't know how effective it actually was in terms of actually training your brain. But sometimes a loss of function, we focus on a loss of function, but sometimes a loss of function is also associated with a gain of function. So there may be something that was unmasked because you've actually lost the sense of smell, or because there was a head injury. And so maybe to start also exploring what other skills, or, you know, what other talents were unmasked. There's this, I'll remember the name hopefully during this talk, but there's this TED talk, and he describes having no math ability whatsoever. Yes. He basically fails throughout school. Yes. People help him along. He wasn't even going to graduate because he could not get his assignments in. His friend filled in his assignment. That's how he graduates from high school. So he did not learn math, is the point. And he goes out drinking one night. He gets hit on the head, and he, in essence, wakes up with this genius math ability.
What?
Now, I'm not saying get hit on the head, and I'm not saying encourage it, but what I'm saying is that there is a...
Don't hit your children on the head that are struggling with math.
No. Don't do that. But what it does show is that the brain has this hidden potential sometimes, and we are likely to focus on what we lost, but focusing on what we gain may give us what we need to actually cope with what we lost.
I so love that. I just feel like it's a whole life metaphor in general for everybody to carry with them, is because it's not just the brain, the body, the everything. So we're going to hold on to that. This masterclass continues after the news.
702 Masterclass.
It is part two on neuroplasticity. We're with Dr. Koti Ranchod, neurologist and brain health specialist, and some questions coming through. But I want to ask you, Doctor, what role does confidence play in neuroplasticity? I mean, during the break, you were saying you could never do what I do, which is, you know, look at four different screens, get given papers, read without checking before. And I'm of the belief that half the time, maybe our brains aren't that active because we've told ourselves, oh, I can't do that thing. Mm.
You're completely right. So one of the things I do incorporate into the work I do and the programs I actually have is a concept called self-efficacy, which is belief in your own ability to either achieve a goal or complete a task. And it's exactly what you're saying. And the example I often give is I believe I can't run a marathon. I honestly believe I can't run a marathon. I don't want this belief to change. Believe that belief alone.
Also, I feel like no doctor has said to me, I need you to run a marathon. So I'm not going to do it.
But because I believe I can't run a marathon, I don't buy the running shoes.
Yes.
I don't get the expert. I don't start running 1 kilometer a day and then build up, maybe with a friend, find the expertise I need and plan towards it. So that means I reinforce my belief that I can't run a marathon. If I had believed I could run a marathon, I would buy the running shoes. I would find somebody who could start running with me. I would potentially get an expert. I would find a running club. So I would take the small necessary steps to achieve the goal. If I failed, if I believed I could do it, I would adjust. I would say, how do I adapt? If I failed, if I say there's no way I could do it, I would say, okay, I've tried, I'm done. So that self-belief does change how we approach the problem at hand, the goal we want to achieve, and then the steps we take to achieving it. So self-efficacy is essential. So when we look at a goal we want to achieve, if we start also at the end point, if I started running the marathon, I fail, I reinforce the belief. If I start running 1 kilometer with a friend, I succeed, I take the next step. So what are the small steps that will support our self-belief does help us in terms of how we function and brain performance.
I love that because it just allows all of us to feel like anything is possible. And like you said, you can't measure the neuroplasticity. The people that come to you come with a problem. It's not like somebody who's healthy saying, hey, is my brain doing okay? But you yourself can start to implement things that improve that, in inverted commas, muscle or that ability and stretch it by starting to take on new challenges. So would you say one of the things you encourage is just try new things? It doesn't have to be, you know, Sudoku or chess, but just the idea of try something that's out of your comfort zone.
Yes, try new things. Try things you wanted to learn but never gave yourself the opportunity to learn. Experiment, play, and give yourself at least 3 or 4 goes at it before you decide, I just don't enjoy this, I don't want to persist.
Yes.
It is a bit like a muscle, actually. So what happens if you learn to play the piano? The parts of the brain that are important for playing the piano are developed more, such as finger coordination and finger movement, compared to if you had learned to play the flute. And then the parts of the brain that control the mouth and the tongue would be developed more. So how we use our brain determines what develops in the brain and then also determines certain other skills that develop because of it.
I feel attacked, doctor, because it's like, yeah, I'm the one who taught myself to play piano and read, and then I just got busy and I stopped, and I have a piano at home, and I'm like, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I can't play anymore, and then I just let it go. I feel attacked. All right, there's some questions coming through on 0727021702. Says, please ask the doctor what causes CRPS illness. Is that related to the brain?
CRPS illness.
I don't know what that is. Let us try our best to search as we move on to another question. Temba from Rustenburg says, I'm having a problem where I can't read anymore. Once I start reading, I sleep immediately. What could be the problem? I've never heard of anything like that in my life. So once you start reading, you sleep immediately. Are you maybe reading when you're tired? I don't know. Doctor?
Yes, I think it's about when you're reading and how tired are you when you're reading, where you're reading. Are you reading in bed and maybe it's stimulating you to sleep? So I think there's lots of things to unpack there in terms of potential causes. Yeah, I do think the way we read has changed also with social media. So now we want these short, brief, quick sort of introductions to whatever we want to read. And that has changed how I read books. And so I'm aware of that. But I think that's a difficult question to just answer. It may be the environment where you are. And so to look at those as factors and consider what you need to change.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, I will explain, Doctor, what CRPS is. And we take your questions, 0727021702. Give us a call, 011-883-0702.
702.
Masterclass.
It is our masterclass part two on neuroplasticity. We are with neurologist and brain health specialist, Dr. Kirsty Ranchod. And your questions are coming through on 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. So the question around CRPS illness is that complex regional pain syndrome. So chronic pain, and I'd like to add a layer to this question. There are some pains. Are there pains that are not nerve pains? They are pains that are happening because your brain is tricking you into believing. Like, for example, if somebody's lost a limb, but they still feel pain in a leg that's not there.
Yeah. And what was the actual question with the...
So they were just saying what causes CRPS. So I would assume trauma of a kind, but if it's just coming from the brain, I don't know.
So complex regional pain syndrome is also similar to what you're asking. That's why I just wanted to know what the question was.
Yes.
So basically the stimulus for pain is gone. Nothing's burning you, nothing's hurting you, but you're still feeling your pain, which means the brain is interpreting pain even though there's no sensation causing pain. So it is a sort of misinterpretation by the brain, and it can be triggered by trauma, damage to the nerve for any reason. Infections such as shingles. So typically people post shingles can have pain. And the specific treatment in terms of to try and reduce it, that is medication related in terms of reduction. But it can be quite debilitating.
Yes, yes, definitely. Does the unhealthy brain affect balance from Nati?
Balance in what sense? Like balance walking in a straight line?
I'm assuming that, yes.
It depends which part of the brain is damaged, and not poor health per se, but if the balanced parts of the brain are damaged, yes, it will. So balanced part of the brain is the cerebellum, which sits at the back of the brain. And it's also affected when you drink a lot. And so that's why you don't have balance. And so if that part of the brain gets damaged with excess alcohol, certain medication, trauma, illness, it can affect balance.
We've got some voice notes with your questions on 072-702-1702.
Hi, Rilabukhile, anonymous from somewhere here. And I would like to comment on what the good doctor is saying about smoking weed. So unfortunately, I do not smoke weed. Not that I haven't tried it. I've tried it once when I was in high school, and I was so paranoid. I was so paranoid, and I had this feeling of angst, you know, inside of me. So I think it's not for my mental health. And yeah, I'm not conservative at all. Maybe I am, but I just want to say I agree with what she is saying about weed and energy drinks and maybe many other things as well. And I implore the youth, because, you know, they are on school holidays. I implore every person listening to your show to stay away from it. You know, it's not worth it. Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Hi, Doctor. 702. I just want the doctor to maybe explain to me, if she maybe can, what is the difference between epilepsy and somebody that has been diagnosed with functional neurological disorder? Because apparently between from what we have gathered from the doctor, that there might be a misdiagnosis. You see somebody with epilepsy and somebody with functional neurological disorder. If the doctor can just maybe elaborate on this for me, I'll listen. Thank you.
All right. So the first was rather a comment around weed. And there was somebody saying, Lebo, contrary to popular belief, this is on the WhatsApp line, weed actually unlocks your mind. You just got to limit the quantity and be selective about your quality of weed. So I half agree with him, because I do agree with what you're saying, Doctor, that some people just don't qualify to be having certain things in their bodies. And that applies to everything. Some people can't even have an energy drink without feeling, you know, completely ill. But yes, quality of weed must be a big thing. If you are smoking terrible weed, you might find yourself in big trouble. Then the question around the difference between epilepsy and functional neurological disorder.
I don't know that I have enough time basically to describe the differences. Epilepsy, in epilepsy, you have a seizure. So multiple seizures, is the disorder is called epilepsy. And there's a trigger that happens typically in the brain. A functional neurological disorder is when there isn't a trigger in the brain, but the person has what looks potentially like a seizure, but the brain function doesn't record a seizure per se. And so it's looked at as being functional, so triggered by something not in the brain, but potentially something stress-related, something psychological, something around the person that is still affecting the person, but not affecting the brain per se.
Okay, and I think that's a nice, simple way of saying it. A question here, and I don't know if we have the time to go so much into the details, so I'll offline it with you, Doctor. In closing on this fantastic masterclass, I feel like we could do this every week, all issues of the brain. What can we do better with, especially reversing, you know, the aging of the brain and just rejuvenating its ability? There's people asking about dementia. How can we reverse these signs that might be showing up?
So we go back to how we started, plasticity, and it really is this really phenomenal capacity of the brain. You support plasticity by eating well, by exercising, by avoiding all those toxins, by spending time with people you love, by stimulating your brain. And what we haven't discussed is also the role of the arts in all of this. So art and music and dance, how it stimulates your brain.
All types of creativity.
And so build that ecosystem around you. Figure out what you want to start with. Start exceptionally small. Make it doable so that we build that self-efficacy that we were talking about, and then take the next step in terms of what you want to do.
And be like Doctor, be conservative, or be like the listeners and leave the bad weed. Thank you so much, Doctor. This conversation will be podcast.